This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 42. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what we say it is every week here on the show. It's a show focused on everything we can think of about fantasy books, especially talking to authors of great fantasy books out there. We're talking anything from epic fantasy to urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, anything you can think of. Expect to find it here with the best and brightest authors from the various corners of the fantasy book world. Plus, we might have some other special guests we pick up along the way. All right, let's go ahead and jump into what's going on in my author world before we kick into our podcast interview. I am super excited because I have a new book launching today, which is always an exciting time for an author. Cyber's Escape, which is book two in the Sapiens Run trilogy. It's a sci-fi dystopian series aimed at YA readers, but I think anybody out there would enjoy it. Certainly my beta readers have enjoyed it. I got my fingers and toes crossed because anytime you launch a new book, you never kind of know how it's going to do. Book one did really well, so I'm hoping people will like book two just as much. So we're going to see. Everybody who got the book at the pre-ordered rate will get it today, and then in about 24 hours, the book will go up in price. So if you actually are listening to this podcast the day of release, you can actually still get it at $2.99. So I hope you enjoy that if you're so inclined. Anyway, that said, I'm sure everything will be all right with that launch. And I've got to move on anyway because can't sit still. I'm writing some stuff and getting ready for a really big whole series release that's coming up in July. Five whole books coming out in rapid succession starting on July 19th. And I'll talk about more about that in the future episodes. So if you're interested in a great urban fantasy series, or at least I hope so, it'll be coming up here and we'll talk about it more in the future. As always, if you're interested in just following what's going on with me, you can do that. Check out my fan group over on Facebook at Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers or on my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com. I always look forward to hearing from you. I love getting back in touch with people. So please go ahead and reach out to me. All right, time to get into this week's podcast episode interview, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm joined this time around by Matt Gilbert, who, in addition to being an author, is also a professional game developer, a veteran, a columnist for his local newspaper, and probably most important of all, the father of three wild boys and two wild girls. So as a father of three kids myself, I know how exciting that can be. So let's check out our interview with Matt. It's coming right up next. Hi, Matt. I want to welcome you to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. It's really great to have you on the show.
Oh, it's good to be here.
So why don't you do us a favor and tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got started writing?
It's sort of something that I always wanted to do as a kid, but I never actually got involved in it over much until I was older. I dabbled, I'll write a little story here as a teenager or something like that, but it's something I never really had the patience with until I was older and wiser, I suppose, maybe a little more life experience. My day job for about the last 30 years has been a video game programmer. And prior to that, I was in the Navy, so I am a veteran. I have a large family. I have five kids. Let's see, what else is interesting? I tell everybody that I was born in Woodbury, Georgia, and I've been on watch for zombies ever since. So that about sums it up, I think.
I think that's good. And first of all, thank you for your service. So we appreciate that always. And I just would like to just kind of follow up on that. You know, you've been on the lookout for zombies. So is fantasy and sci-fi kind of stuff been your jam all along?
Oh yeah, man. You know, fantasy, sci-fi, video games, you know, it's there's lots of geek stuff going on in my life. Same thing with the wife. In fact, we got married in a Star Wars wedding at a convention. So, you know, we're there, man.
That's totally awesome. Yeah. It's funny. I used to go and stay out at the old Hilton out in Vegas when I went out for conferences out there frequently. And back then it used to have a whole Star Wars section to it. There was like a bar there that looked like Quark's bar from Deep Space Nine. And there was a wedding chapel there where you could get married by a Klingon. And my wife and I always joked that we should go out there sometime and renew our vows at a Klingon ceremony. And then they tore that section out and remodeled it. So never got the chance.
That is unfortunate because that would appeal to me and my current wife, but I would never do it because the previous wife and I got married at a drive-through there in Vegas, and I probably would not. I probably wouldn't put her through that now. So.
Completely understand. You gotta watch those things. Keep us out of trouble exactly. With the women folk, right?
Yeah, let's not schedule any marriages in the same place as we were married to the last wife. Right?
I think that's important lesson there, life lesson learned. So listen, first of all, I just want to congratulate you. Your book's out this week as we record this, Sins of the Fathers series with yep. Dead Gods Do. Book one came out yesterday, as a matter of fact, as we record this show.
Yes, it did.
So tell us a little bit about this book and this series and kind of its genesis.
Okay, so this series centers around a long dead god's ancient prophecy of the end of the world. And it happened long ago, and people took it seriously, but a lot of people simply don't even know about it anymore. Only like scholarly type people even know about it at the outset of the books. So I have fairly long prologues that kind of clue the reader in on what was going on in the history, and then the characters themselves are trying to sort things out and decide how that they're going to respond. And for the most part, they are met with people not taking it too seriously. They don't really believe in it. And the main character in the first book, or one of the main characters at any rate, Yazid, he finds that his culture of Xanthia, they don't believe him. And they're probably more concerned about the wars of today than the wars of the past. So he goes off in search of this other culture that in the past they fought, with the hopes that he can find some allies there. And that is the central thesis of the book is these guys trying to get along because they're very disparate cultures. The Xanthians are very warlike, very concerned about personal power. And the Nilotians, who are the other culture, are a fairly corrupt. They're more concerned about politics kinds of things. So they have to deal with contention amongst themselves as well as any sort of issue of dealing with the end of the world.
So is there, you're talking about these two cultures clashing with each other. You know, we see that all the time in the world around mm-hmm. us. You know, it's, you know, cultures trying to find common ground. Did you deal with that in the books at all?
Very much so. That's kind of the central notion is that, you know, they obviously nobody wants the world to end, but they're so different and they have history of animosity between each other, that it's really difficult for them to cooperate. In fact, their first meeting, they end up trying to kill each other, despite the fact that there are very important reasons not to. So.
You mentioned, in the description of, the first book, Dead Gods Do, that you, say it's perfect for fans of books like Frank Miller's 300. I love that book, but I also enjoyed the movie and all that stuff. Mm. Is this the kind of story where you can expect that kind of epic, epic battles and that kind of action and intrigue?
The Xanthians are certainly reminiscent of the Spartans. The battles themselves in the first book are of a smaller nature because it's a small group of people doing this. So there's not going to be, you know, 300 against thousands or anything like that. Again, the battles tend to be – they're small groups, so they're like, you know, 2 versus 8 or something like that. Or political in the case of some of the ones that we're dealing with the Nilotian culture. So there is that feel of it, I think. I think you could definitely compare the Xanthians to the Spartans.
Awesome. And I know that the books are coming out pretty much back to back. Book two, Mad God's Muse, comes out in what, 3 or 4 weeks, I think, from now, which is
I think it's awesome. July 23rd.
Yep.
I think.
Yeah, that's the number I have here on the screen, and it's pretty exciting. So, but you said the books and the battles in the first books aren't like that, but it sounds like things kind of ramp up as the series goes on.
Yes, exactly. The battles get bigger, the stakes get bigger, and hopefully your favorite character doesn't die.
So you're saying there's a chance?
yes, there is a chance, certainly.
Well, you know, that's something that we as authors contend with all the time is, you know, what do we do about killing off characters? Because you invest some of yourself into these characters. People, it's funny, people, readers, get very upset when you kill off characters that are favorites of theirs. And I don't think they realize that often when we kill off a character like that, it's because we feel that pain probably much more than they do.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, there's a and it's not just any emotional investment you may have. You know, there's practical investment as well, because, you know, a well-made character is a useful device, as well as being, you know, like a person that you kind of feel will be lost as well. So that's always a difficult decision. You know, does the story get better or does the story get worse? You know, is there any way where this person could sensibly survive, or would it just defy any kind of credibility for them to survive, that kind of thing? So, yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, and you know, you can find often what happens is you have to find a character or even sometimes two characters to fill that role that has been left open in the storyline now.
I would say that I don't necessarily do it that way. Okay. If somebody gets killed, they get killed and the chips fall where they may. Now, I suppose if it were a critical role that, like, okay, the book is going to be completely ruined now, as opposed to going a different direction, yeah, I'd have to find something. But typically, if it made sense and everything was going and characters were behaving in character, et cetera, I would be willing to change the results of how things go if it seemed that that was more appropriate, rather than trying to force them to stick to any kind of pre-planned plot or storyline.
Okay. So would you consider yourself a pantser or a plotter? I mean, do you really plan out these books?
I'm kind of midway.
Okay.
And it's precisely just because what I told you. So I do a fairly meticulous plan. In fact, I kind of write the book shorthand firstly, right? So that way I can see these sorts of problems coming, because when I first got started with this, I experienced a lot of cases of characters I had built who were deep enough that they weren't going to do what I had originally imagined that they were going to do. Some characters I had to split into like two characters and stuff like that, because the one character was not going to do for the role. And so I write the book and then I write the book, if that makes any sense. So I write it shorthand, a little bit of dialogue, no description kind of stuff, so that there's less to change and rewrite if I run into any big problems. So there's your pants version. And after that, then I actually write the book once I have everything laid out. I mean, you know, then I'm very much less likely to go off the rails. And there's your plot version.
Oh, that's great. You know, and I call it a spectrum. You know, nobody's ever purely one or the other, I think. Even those who think they are, you know, you find out that they still leave themselves open, like as hardcore plotters, they still leave themselves open to that opportunity for the character to speak to them and say, no, I'm going to do this right now. And
that's a huge thing, man. It really is.
Oh, and people don't realize that. I mean, it's funny. Mm-hmm. You say that to somebody who's not a writer, who doesn't write fiction. You say something like, oh, I was writing something the other day, and the character just did something I completely didn't expect them to do. And they're looking at you like, but didn't you write that?
Yes, exactly. You know, and they give you the odd looks and stuff. But yeah, it's totally true. Well, it's true if you care about what you're doing, I think. If you're making good characters with what's the phrase that Gygax used to use, the word, the 25-cent word, verisimilitude. If your characters have that quality, then yeah, they're going to do things that at times you're like, this wasn't what this character was supposed to do. So now I have to fix this.
And you get credit for working verisimilitude into the podcast for the first time ever, I think. So here we are, episode, 42? And verisimilitude shows up now, folks. You heard it here.
Credit to Gary Gygax, man. He taught me that word.
You know, word to him, right? I mean, I remember I actually played, and somewhere in the basement here around my studio, I have the original three-book paperback set that came, that he put out. Because that's when I started playing. I'm old. It's interesting that how many people I know that are write good fantasy books have that basis in role-playing gaming, where they actually got to see the effect of characters acting on each other through playing with their friends.
Yep. And a loose plot that is subject to change depending on the actions of the characters, which gets into just what we were talking about just now.
So you've got this series, you know, we're talking about strong characters. Do you find yourself really coming up with the idea of the characters after you have this kernel of an idea for a story and then build the story out from there? Or do you just have this idea for this plot line and you build characters into it?
No, the former, most definitely. I have a general idea of the situation. I start building characters. And then a lot of what the characters do determines the drama. I mean, you know, in real life, drama is what people do, right? It's created by the decisions of people, and those decisions are based in an environment that they're set in. But the environment isn't their decisions, and they can always make dumb decisions or inappropriate decisions. So it's the characters really drive the story. They have to.
And that comes back to that whole show don't tell thing that when we teach people to write and talk about our writing ourselves is, you know, giving this dump of information is not as good as having characters actually live it and show and demonstrate what is happening in the real world.
I may get lumped on occasion for doing telling, and it's.
There's a place for it. I mean, there's a place for it where you have to like give some history, but you know, I some authors, you know, you go page and page and page and it's basically reading a history book.
Yeah, no, I don't do that. But I have certain characters, the sorcerers in my books, they actually manipulate reality by choosing to believe or disbelieve certain things. So when we're in their heads, they are basically dictating the state of reality. They do telling, which I hope that the astute reader picks up on that. That's how they work sorcery, dude.
That's awesome. I usually try to read books ahead of time, but since yours just came out, I didn't have a chance to do that. And I'm feeling like I'm floundering because it sounds like an amazing concept, and I'm definitely have already added Dead Gods Due to my reading list because it looks like just fantastic reading.
I'm getting good response to it is what I would say. You know, you're always too close to your work, I think, to know, you know, if it's anything other than, you know, a pile of crap. You never really know. I mean, you have a sense, but you don't really know how it's going to be received. But I'm getting good responses so far is what I would say.
Well, yeah, you got a bunch of 5-star reviews, which is pretty awesome. Yep. To get started out and only a few days into the book release. And
those are people I don't even know, you know.
that's awesome. Isn't that a great feeling as an author to kind of get that
very
like, wow,
so.
People I don't know like my book.
Yeah, very much so.
So as far as writing these things, you know, a lot of people will say write for yourself. A lot of people will say, no, write what the market wants you to write. You know, where do you fall on that scale?
I write for myself. I'm very well compensated in my day job. And I spend a tremendous amount of time and, you know, probably with very little or perhaps even negative financial rewards for doing so to create the sort of art that I want to read. So absolutely for myself.
There's something to be said for that. I do that too. And I try to write something for myself that I think other people will like, but ultimately the story has to resonate with me, or I don't think it has the same amount of power as just writing a story that doesn't make any sense to you.
That's absolutely the case. You know, I firmly believe that if you write something that you love, that there will be people, there will be plenty of people out there who will also love it. I don't count myself as a unique and special snowflake by any means. So if I think something is pretty cool, then probably lots of other people are going to think it's pretty cool. But, you know, if they don't, I still think it's pretty cool. So that's how I look at it.
I completely agree. And you know, it's, I find that the parts of the books that seem to resonate most with my readers are the same parts of the books that I tend to get chills when I read them again. Like,
I agree.
I don't know if you agree with that. Your books are kind of new for you. I mean, more recently written. I've had the opportunity to get audiobooks done and listen to those audiobooks of books I wrote 4 years ago, and am like sitting there listening to the narrator going, I wrote this. This is pretty awesome.
Yep. Yeah, I've recently listened to the audio on a couple of mine, actually. I guess Ralph Lister did the vocals. He's pretty good with it. I thought he did an excellent job. And there's certain scenes that when they're put in like that, you're like, this is good. This is impressive. I'm not sure if I wrote this or if somebody doctored it afterwards, you know.
I did see that you're in audio. That's awesome. I might just pick it up on audiobook then, because that's an easier way for me to get through it. So that's pretty cool.
On the commute, eh?
Yeah. Well, my commute is walking downstairs. So
mine too, actually.
But I put on audiobooks when I'm doing stuff around the house and chores and stuff outside and things like that.
Right on.
You know, which is when I get a lot of my quote unquote reading done. Is just a good way for me to do it. My wife, though, just blows through audiobooks. She's got a over 1 hour commute one way to work, and she's just audiobooks all the time.
Yeah, I can imagine. I back in the day when I got started on this, there weren't really a lot of audiobooks, and in fact, probably I did a lot of the plotting and thinking about this on a 2 hour commute that I used to have like down in Silicon Valley. So that was actually perhaps some of the deepest origins of these novels, actually. So it's interesting that it would come full circle like that.
No, it's great. And it's great to see somebody putting audiobooks out concurrently with the books that they release. That's something I'm working on doing more now as I catch up with my backlist and start putting out fresh books. I've been focused on doing that.
That's all Aethon. I mean, you know, they're, I think they're, you know, headed in the right direction. I think they have the trend down there. I'm actually surprised. I didn't really necessarily think that audiobooks would be a big thing, but once my eyes were open to it, I'm like, yeah, this is a big deal. There's a lot of people who are spending a lot of time like on commutes and stuff and are going through these at a prodigious rate. So it's a little surprising to me, but you know, now that I understand the dynamics, I'm like, yeah, that's the way to go, man.
Yeah. It's the fastest growing single segment of the book market. It's pretty amazing when you look at the numbers of audiobook growth. And I know the big five publishers all doubled down this year saying they were working actively to put all their back catalog into audiobook for most of these for the last 5 years of stuff that didn't all go to audiobook.
I can absolutely see why.
Yeah. And as an indie author, you know, I get to see the stats early. You know, I get to see things up front as they come in day by day. And my audiobooks, you know, are easily one of the most significant portions of my income. So I love it. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, talking to the readers, because these are new books. Is there a place where you anticipate really trying to get in contact with the people who've read your books and reaching out to them?
I think I'm probably most active on my Facebook page. So I'm certainly open to talking to people. I tend to be really busy, so I don't post as much as I should. I probably should get out here and post more and, you know, be, you know, jovial and convivial and, you know, personal kind of guy. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, I don't know how much of a people person I really am. I mean, you know, I chose writing and working with machines as a career. So I don't start many conversations, but I'm always open to having them.
You know, it's funny. I find myself the odd guy out a lot of times when I go to author events, because I am pretty much an extrovert. So I have to like tone myself down a few levels when I'm in person, because sometimes, you know, people are like, why are you so out, you know, flamboyant? It's like, I'm just happy to see people that do what I do, because for me, being in my house without regular contact with people can like really drive me into a deep depression. I have to like leave the house once a day and go into town and just kind of just walk around, because otherwise I go crazy.
I'm the opposite. I'm like, you know, I realize there's a point where I'm like, I haven't left the house in a week. I should probably do that. You know, I should turn off the turret so I'm not executed on my way out, man. You know, the defense perimeter and all. So,
oh, it's great. But the important thing is you are open to reach for people to reach out to you. So,
absolutely.
And looking forward to that. And I think that's important for people to realize is that, you know, every author I've had here on the show is super open to talking to their readers and on whatever channel they prefer. It sounds like you're leaning towards Facebook, and that's great. I know you have a website as well. Is that Nelos.com?
Nelos.com. Nelos is the name of the city of one of the cultures, actually.
Okay. So Nihlos.com. That's your website. And they have ways they can probably contact you there as well, which is cool.
Yes.
It's awesome to have you on. Now you've got Mad God's Muse and then War God's Will, the three books in a row. They're coming out basically like 4 weeks apart, it looks like. So what's the plan after that? Do you have any other projects in the works?
Well, there are several more stories. My intention here had always been to tell distinct like three volume tales, so you know you could read like this trilogy and it will provide a satisfying ending, but I intend currently, you know, plans could change, but I intend currently to pick this up in about 30 years down the line, so it will be kind of a new wave of similar stories associated with the kind of world bending artifact that is central to the game. I'm sorry, to the story itself.
And you said game, and it's funny, but a lot of these books, you know, a lot of fantasy books lend themselves to a gaming aspect or like using some sort of role-playing system or something like that to kind of bring the game to life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and there's a lot of background here, actually, in our own role-playing game that we had, actually. This entire series of books is kind of a backstory to a game that we played, oh, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, something like that. So there was much that was inspired from role-playing. I mean, of course, you know, you can't really take directly from a game and make an interesting book with it. I mean, maybe if you're doing lit RPG or something, but there's a lot of gameisms that don't translate well to novels. But if you can use them as good inspiration, yeah, that's a great source of things that would kind of drive your imagination.
I have garnered so many awesome character quirks and changes of direction from campaigns I've played in over the years where, you know, one of my friends, you know, did something totally in character, but also totally unexpected by everyone else in the party.
And they still talk about it every time you get together.
We do. I mean, it's literally like, I cannot believe you did that. But we all agreed at the time, like we were all like stunned. And then we all were like, well, that's like in character, in alignment. Yeah, yep. We should have expected it, actually.
20 years later, I still get together with my old gaming buddies, and they're still bitching at each other. I can't believe you shot my dude that time.
Yeah. Isn't that awesome? I mean, yes. You know, it's one of the things that I think the things that connect us to our friends from childhood and earlier in life, there are a few things that are as powerful as having a group of gaming buddies because of just how close you get and how much time you spent together.
It's a creation of a shared mythology. That's all your own, man.
Yeah, that's very awesome. So, Matt, as we kind of wrap up here, is there anything else you'd like to share? What you'd like people to look for as they pick up Dead Gods Do and prepare for the rest of the books to come out in short order?
What I would say is I hope that people appreciate the notion of the conflict of cultures that go on there. The cultures are quite disparate, and they have difficulty getting along both amongst themselves and with each other. And I think that I think that's kind of, you know, a central and driving part of the book. I think there's a lot of different viewpoints in there. I think there's enough that I'm going to be surprised at who's favorite character, et cetera, which is why I say I can't really say if people's favorite characters will survive or not, because I'm not sure who they will be. And I think that that'll be a lot of fun discovering that.
That will wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us online for a whole lot more from the whole fantasy-focused community. You can find that community over on Facebook and over as well on fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. I'd love to hear from you. Also on the website, you'll find below each podcast episode post, the links to subscribe to these episodes so that you can find out when a new episode comes out using your mobile apps for iOS, Android, apps like Stitcher, TuneIn. You can even subscribe to get an email notification when a new episode comes out. Make sure you do that, though. Head over and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes at all. We have some pretty awesome guests coming up in the future. You won't want to miss them. We've got the awesome Faith McKinstry coming up on the next episode, and that's going to be fun to chat with her. Also, you want to stay tuned because we've got a lot coming on in, over the summer, some really big authors in the works, and I really think you might want to subscribe because there's going to be some cool stuff happening over the next few months. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'm the author of what I like to call Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook. My Facebook page is at Jamie Davis Books, or at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where if you want, you can get a free copy of one of my books just to try out. And all you have to do is sign up for my newsletter over there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe. Come back here and check out the next podcast. In the meantime, I'll remind you, as I always do, to, hey, keep your eyes open out there, folks, because there's magic all around you.